Welcome to your own health and fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman, and I come to you weekly to discuss self-care and integrated health. Most of us, if lucky, will outlive our parents. And although we live in a culture where youth is exalted and death is never discussed, age and its accompanying limitations sort of creep up on our loved ones, usually before we're ready. How should we prepare ourselves to become caretakers of those who cared for us before we were able to look after ourselves? What if our parents are independent and capable people who are proud of their independence? How much should we insinuate ourselves into their lives if we see them struggling? On the other side, what if our older relatives are unable to make necessary decisions and want to be dependent? What are our obligations and options? Join me this hour as I interview author Virginia Morris about how to care for aging parents. Virginia Morris is an award-winning journalist who reports on healthcare and medicine, and she lives in Sag Harbor, New York, with her husband and son, and I welcome her to the show. Virginia Morris.
Hi, how are you?
I'm okay. Thank you for joining us. I guess I should start by saying, were you prepared when you lost a parent?
I don't know that you're ever prepared, and even if you're prepared in the sense that you have, you know, papers in place and have done your homework and have thought about it, you're never emotionally prepared. And I think even the first time you sort of look at your parent and realize they're aging, it's a little bit of a shock, much less when you actually lose a parent.
Actually, you do talk in the book about emotionally preparing yourself if such a thing is possible, but I think, as you just said, it's one of those things that you can't really prepare yourself for.
But you certainly can plan ahead.
I mean,
you certainly can get yourself as ready as possible, and it's something that I encourage people to do constantly, and I know, like any sort of planning in life, it's not something people do. You put it off and you don't have time. But there's certainly things you can do to plan, and I think in this case it's so important, because what tends to happen is most people just react to one crisis after the next, and they aren't ready. And I can't tell you how many people have said to me, oh, I wish I had done this before. It would have saved me so much effort, and it would have meant better care for my parent. And there are a number of things you can do to get ready.
Well, why don't we start by having you give us some kind of list of, at least, just, we'll go back in, sort of unpack them, but a list of sort of what categories of life issues we need to be thinking ahead to. Because my observation also is people sort of reach this logjam, and all of a sudden things have to be handled very quickly, and you can't always do that. It's not always possible to do that. So what sorts of things do you think, what sorts of categories do you think have to be thought of ahead of time?
Well, you're exactly right. I think one of the most important things you can do is start the conversation, and it's not an easy thing to do, but you need to talk to your parent about housing and medical care and legal issues and finances. You know, mom, if one day you couldn't live in this house anymore, what would be important to you? Where might you want to live? What, you know, what would you fear? Medical care, the same finances. Could you afford to live somewhere else? Can you afford long-term sort of care? And I think it's actually much easier to have those conversations when your parent is still relatively healthy and young, and it's not right hanging over their heads. The other thing you need to do is get legal documents in place, make sure they have a will, make sure they have advance directives, which is a living will and a health care power of attorney, which gives you or someone else the authority to make medical decisions for your parent. And make sure they have a durable power of attorney, which allows you to make other sorts of financial housing kinds of decisions. Make sure all those things are in place, that you know where they are. And the third thing I would say is to even do a very quick little research project, especially if your parents really are getting older. Find out what sort of services exist in their community. Find out what sort of housing options exist. And you really can do that pretty quickly. But just get a very brief handle on it, so you know what's out there.
It isn't just the the adult child that doesn't want to think about these things, it's very difficult to know when to begin to have these kinds of conversations with parents, because they often don't want to think about this stuff either.
No.
So when do you think people should begin to get involved?
Honestly, I don't think it's ever too early to start at least having the conversations. People often say to me, oh, my parents are, you know, in their 60s and they don't, this isn't an issue for us. Well, it's not an issue, but if you can have those conversations and sort of start that being something that you're thinking about, it means that as you move into those more frail years, it's something you've talked about. It's not new and scary. It's something you sort of know. And really, you're not being morbid or depressing. You're saying, I care, and I want to help, and I want to be part of this with you. And I think you can do it in a supportive way. And the other reason to bring it up early is just exactly what you're saying. You bring it up, and mom says, oh, why would you want to talk about that? You know, a few months later, you've sort of planted a seed. It's there. She's going to think about it. And a few months later, when you bring it up again, maybe she has thought about it. But it can take months or a year even to get to the point where you can have some of these conversations. So the sooner you start that going, I think the easier it is. Then when a parent has a stroke or something's happened, you've been there before. This isn't taboo stuff. So I think it's never too early to start.
I think we should talk about the dangers of trying to parent a parent.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And people refer to it all the time as parenting their parents, and I urge them in the book, you know, to really stay away from that view. I think as soon as you start thinking of your parent as the child and you're the adult, you know, of course that's demeaning to them, and they're going to resist anything you say after you've done that. And you're going to be frustrated because they're not a child. You know, they're not going to respond the way a child would, growing and learning and getting better at things, and sort of looking to you as an authority. You really have to see it as completely different roles.
I think there's another thing also that I think comes into play, which is there's a generational difference in how people deal with their feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
There can be a real breach between a adult who believes in feeling your feelings and being therapeutic about them, and an older adult parent who has gotten through the difficulties of life by skirting real difficult things, not diving into them, but handling them by distracting themselves with other things and getting through it emotionally, you know, somehow, and having some respect for the differences in the way that people deal with their emotions.
Yeah, whatever those differences might be,
yeah.
Exactly. And respecting, too, that old age can be a very hard time of life. It can be a wonderful time of life for certain people, but as even those of us in our 40s and 50s know, you know, it's not easy seeing yourself grow older. And I think for someone in their 60s, 70s, or 80s, you know, maybe you've lost a job, maybe you're losing some physical abilities, maybe you've lost some friends. I mean, there's a lot that you're dealing with that the adult child just cannot understand. And so you have to respect that they're in a different place, that you haven't been there yet, that you don't know. There's a lot they're losing, and they certainly don't need to, on top of all that, lose your respect and sense that they are still your parent. So I think if you can always remember that they are the parent and that they, you know, are the person that you sort of looked up to, and always treat them with that respect and a little sense of, as you say, you know, respecting that they have different ways of dealing with things. I say in the book that your job is not to take control of your parent's life, but to help your parent maintain control of it. And I do think that's really important, that really all you're trying to do is give them as much independence and power as they can have.
I should mention that the book is called The Complete Guide, How to Care for Aging Parents by Virginia Morris, M-O-R-R-I-S, and it is published by Workmen, M-A-N. I mentioned at the top of the show that there's often a very distinct split between the parent who has, or the set of parents who have been extremely independent and fiercely independent all their lives, you know, and then the parent who tends to be, if there's one parent that's beginning to be less competent, the parent that's left, the spouse that's left, sometimes feels very dependent and wants to be cared for and wants the decisions to be made, but they're still adults. So there's this, on both sides of this type of character issue, it's extremely dicey.
Oh, and it's never easy. I mean, neither one is easy. So I think the question of when to intervene in this sense that you say of the independence is, it's tricky because you do walk a fine line between protecting them and making sure everything's in place and that they have the help they need, etc., live where they need to live, and really taking over. I think if things are...
Taking over or letting them take over.
Yeah.
If they're dependent.
Right. Right. Yeah, two different issues.
Because it seems to me also that you may really want to help and you may realize... I've seen a lot of caretakers, in my consulting practice as a health educator, people come to me and tell me what's going on. And one of the major stressors for people in their 50s and 60s is a disabled parent who is taking all of their time and energy. And,
oh, absolutely.
And the difficulty is that eventually what happens is somebody in their 50s and 60s is not as vigorous as a young person, and they're getting exhausted, and they're getting to the ends of their abilities to handle stuff, and they end up with stress-related illnesses and stuff. So there has to be some way... I mean, the thing I'm trying to get you to say,
yes,
is to encourage people to
take care of themselves.
To take care of themselves and to find some balance between what your parent needs and what you need, remembering that if you don't take care of what you need, you won't be able to care for anybody.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting because there's been sort of, I think, over the last few years, this sense that the family is disintegrated in America. And, you know, as you know, you get into this stuff, and that couldn't be farther from the truth. I have seen just what you have, is the caregiver ends up in the hospital because they're just doing so much, or they end up on welfare because they've, you know, forked over so much for their parent. And I find my job is really to rein people in a little bit and say, you have to find some balance. You have to really, in a very concrete way, say, you know, this is what I can do for Mom. And write it down. You know, I visit twice a week, and I will bring her dinner on Sunday, and I'll help handle her finances. And that's what I do, and that's really helpful, and I feel good about it, and that's it. I'm not going to, you know, I can't take on more. And be very clear about what you can't do. I mean, ideally, you would make her young and healthy and happy, but this is, you know, probably a downward spiral, and you're not going to be able to do that, and you need to find some balance, and you really need to take breaks and take care of yourself, and it's a very hard thing to do when a parent needs you, but you can't let them eat you up.
There's an additional piece, too, which is that it's almost a guarantee that even if you think you've dealt with any of the less obvious issues in your relationship to your parents, that as they age and the relationship gets more complicated and you have to discuss these things that are dicey to discuss, that there are all kinds of, as you say, emotional triggers that get pushed. And one of the things that you point out in the book is that that creates an opportunity, and to try to remember that it's an opportunity, because it's very, very, it becomes very escalated and hot, and you feel like no matter what you say, you get yourself into trouble, or you're losing control of your own emotional strategy, because it's a very hot situation.
Well, which is why it's good when people go talk to people like yourself and other, I mean, I do urge people to go, you know, deal with a therapist on some things, because you're not going to suddenly create this Norman Rockwell relationship that you dreamed of as a child and, you know, quickly patch everything up. You know, you have to have reasonable expectations of what's going to happen here, and sometimes that happens, but I think you have to keep it reasonable. It is amazing, as you're saying. I remember when I was first doing the book, meeting this woman who was in her 70s, and she was caring for her mother who was in her 90s, and her mother had moved in with her, and she had turned into a six-year-old child.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All of your, you know, you become a child when you're around your parents. And
sometimes.
Here she was, this 75-year-old woman who was, you know, oh, Mom always tells me how to make dinner, and, you know, why doesn't she let me do it myself? And, you know, all these old squabbles had sort of crept back in her life. And it really, you can find yourself sort of going back in time, and you have to...
Well, one of the things that's useful in that situation, one of the things that's useful to remember in that situation, not all adults regress when they're with their parents. They may have feelings that are old come up, but they don't all regress. But one of the things that's very tricky about any relationship is that when one person tries to change the nature of the relationship, tries to behave in a different way and change the relationship, particularly in a situation with a child where a child is trying to behave as an adult. Sometimes the parent, depending on their emotional health or needs, will become more difficult in response to that to try to drag you back into a situation that they're familiar with.
Absolutely.
So it's extremely charged. And in addition to this, some families have situations where if there's any sibling rivalry or any competitive quality to the sibling relationship, that's going to become extremely, that's going to amplify during this period as well.
Well, yeah, I was just about to say that, and especially because it tends to be that one of the children becomes sort of the primary caregiver, and there can be lots of resentments and anger over, you know, why aren't you helping me more, and why are you doing it this way, and it really can be helpful in those situations to either write a letter or call a very formal family meeting and discuss the issues, really the issues about your parents' care, not the, I always hated you, you always bossed me around, but really figure out how you're going to do things in a way that you can get along. Because those relationships, while they can get closer too, can also be as exhausting as the actual care you're providing for your parent. All that anger and resentment.
You're listening to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman, and I'm on the phone with Virginia Morris, who is a journalist who's written a wonderful book called How to Care for Aging Parents. Morris is M-O-R-R-I-S, and the book is published by Workman. This brings up another issue, which is, particularly with siblings, there are legal issues about who has the power. Often what will happen is the older sibling will have, is it called power of attorney?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Why don't you explain what that's about and whether or not there's some better ways to set this up so there's less of a riff?
Well, a durable power of attorney just means that your parent is giving someone the authority to make legal and financial decisions on her behalf, should she not be able to do that for herself. I mean, the risk can begin with a parent who just is afraid of giving over power, when in fact you can write it up so it's in effect at certain points, you know, if she's in the hospital and if this and if that. She needs to find someone she trusts and is close to and is physically close to, who can be there when she needs it. But you're right. I mean, it tends to be one sibling is chosen to do that, and hopefully it's the sibling who is actually nearby and is providing, is the primary caregiver. But again, you need to look it up and make sure it's there and you have it and you know who it is and all of that. I'm not sure how you would deal with siblings being angry about who has that power, but you certainly need to make it clear who it is and why you chose them and all of that.
In addition, there's, as I understand it, another step that can be taken if parents are wanting the children or the kids to be, the adult children, to be responsible for everything. If a spouse that's left, a spouse that's dealing with a disabled partner, kind of gives over and says, I don't want to think about this. I just want you to figure it out and deal with it. There are other legal issues where the children can have more legal control over the finances when you're getting into a situation with money where there may or may not be enough, and the surviving spouse or the spouse with more compos mentis is not wanting to do this. But it is a step that I think most parents are not prepared to make. Do you want to?
Well, and you can do all sorts of sort of forms of that. I mean, a power of attorney is ideal because it's just here. You have power of attorney. Here's the checkbook. You know, you could open up a joint checkbook. You can put a certain amount of money aside that the child is responsible for. Maybe it's not all your money. You can give them just certain powers, check writing powers, but not the ability to, whatever, sell a stock or something. Again, it's how much power do they want to give you and how much do you want? But it's a good thing to have in place and to really know about what their finances are and what's going on. And I think the mistake is usually not that the parent is giving the power over, but that they won't.
Yeah, they often won't. And again, when it's a situation where money is, you know, it's even not even clear how much money there is there, and you're dealing with maybe some kind of long-term care.
Well, and I think that's a really important issue to bring up, because I don't think anyone realizes until they're there how expensive
right.
long-term care can be. And when we say long-term care, we're referring both to any kind of nursing care, nursing home care, or in-home nursing care.
Is it equally expensive? Is it as expensive for someone
to
come in
versus a nursing home?
Yeah.
Well, generally a nursing home is going to be more, but it depends on if you have around the clock and what kind of nursing. And but I think people don't realize that someone who's really considerably
right.
well off can find themselves on Medicaid, which is welfare,
mm-hmm.
Very quickly, because if you're spending $80,000 to $100,000 a year or $60,000, it doesn't take many years to eat up a pretty good nest egg. And, you know, that's why, again, talking about it in advance, and do you need long-term
mm-hmm.
care insurance?
Why don't you explain what that is?
Long-term care insurance is basically just insurance that provides long-term care. So you buy it in your 50s or 60s, and then if you need certain long-term care, and you do have to read it pretty carefully to see what they provide, because they're all different, you know, it's covered. Or maybe your parent goes into one of these continuing care retirement centers that you go in while you're still basically independent, but the guarantee is that they'll care for you for life.
This is a very important point, and this is the one that I think most people are missing, which is that people very naively think, well, there's money. You know, we have some money.
Sure, we can
take care of this. We'll be all right. We don't really want to think about this. So everything will be fine, and, you know, it'll be all right. And then one of the spouses really needs help, you know?
That's right.
Somebody's getting demented or having some Alzheimer's or has had a number of physical problems, which makes it very hard for them to move around, and the spouse that's left that's caring, the spouse that's more ambulatory, who's caring for them, it begins to get unrealistic about whether they can actually pick them up and help them to the bathroom if it comes to that, or if they fall down, get them up off the floor. I mean, these are unpleasant things for people to think about, but they often wait until such an event happens, and what they don't realize is that you can't just decide that, all right, well, so it's, you know, enormously expensive for a nursing home, but we'll just get this person into a nursing home and it'll be fine. You can't get into a nursing home if you're too disabled. They won't take you. They'll take healthier people first.
Well, into one of these continuing, a nursing home will, but that's right, one of these continuing care sort of things. That's exactly right. In fact, I'm going through it with my own mother. It's, well, I'm not ready for that yet. Well, when you're ready for it, they won't take you anymore. the other thing, I think people assume that Medicare, which provides health insurance for people over 65, will cover this. And Medicare does not cover nursing home care or in-home long-term care. And people are often shocked when they find out, oh, this isn't covered by any insurance, and mom needs all this help, and we got to pay for it out of pocket. And, you know, it comes as a big surprise to people when they haven't reviewed these issues.
Well, now, long-term care is something that you're saying people in their mid-50s and 60s should sort of maybe think about getting. But that's almost like getting life insurance. It's very hard to make yourself do that. What about Medigap? Does that work as well, or is it really? Are you really saying, gee, you know what, people really ought to consider long-term care
insurance?
Well,
there are two different things. Medigap covers things that Medicare doesn't cover, like drugs or certain co-payments or that sort of thing. But even Medigap insurance doesn't cover nursing home care or long-term care insurance. And I'm not necessarily saying everyone should run out and buy long-term care insurance. I'm just saying they should consider it. If somebody is going to meet the requirements for Medicaid, which is the sort of insurance program, I mean the welfare program, then they don't need to bother with long-term care insurance because Medicaid will cover that sort of care. If they have a substantial amount of money on the other end of the spectrum, again, they might not need long-term care insurance. But it's a good thing to, you know, go talk to a elder care lawyer or, you know, some lawyer who really has a lot of experience in this and find out what you do need, or a financial.
Well, why don't you explain what the things to consider are? Because I would think that people also are very naive about their assets. They think, oh, well, we have a home. you know, and
right.
we have some money in the bank,
right.
so everything's fine. Well, first of all, nobody realizes that, and we might as well put some numbers on the table. I mean, my impression last time I looked is that assisted living, which allows long-term care if somebody becomes disabled, you're looking at something like $4,000 a month for a couple.
Oh,
I mean, it's
well or
really,
more.
Or more, and this is if you can get in.
Prescription drugs to that, and, oh, it's wildly expensive.
It's enormously expensive, and it isn't easy. I mean, I'm sorry to keep harping on this,
no,
but
that's okay.
It's not easy to get into these places, and that's something, you know, there may be a limited number of places in an area that you're interested in,
that's
and
right.
they won't let you in. You're on a waiting list. It costs sometimes $1,000, non-refundable, just to apply.
Mm-hmm.
So this stuff has to be thought of ahead of time. And
well, I like this because I'm not, the, you know, I feel like I'm the broken record on this
yeah.
subject because, again, talking about this ahead of time and doing a little bit of research, you know, you might find that there is a place that would be wonderful, but it has a 3-year waiting list and you're on it because you thought about it ahead of time.
And then, God forbid, something should happen to you while you're on the waiting list.
Well, that's right, but at least you've gotten on it and you're,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, often if, and I honestly have done this with my mom to get her on these waiting lists, and she's really fought it. But but I've said, you know, if your name comes up, that you can always say no and, you know, put it off for a couple of years. But at least you're on the list, and if you need it, it's there. But you're absolutely right. A lot of the best places have waiting lists, and a lot of the best services have waiting lists. So you really need to get signed up ahead of time. And, you know, I can't really give you specific guidelines on who needs long-term care insurance and who doesn't because Medicaid is different in every state.
Oh, okay.
And
so you, what you're saying is whatever your situation is, you ought to assess it early on when you're middle-aged.
Assess it early on and see
yeah.
what, because, you know,
yeah.
$400,000 or $500,000 may not cover two people's old age, a couple's
that's right.
old age.
That's right. And that's what most people think in terms of trying to have put away for retirement. We're going to need to break for about 30 seconds. Virginia Morris, M-O-R-R-I-S, author of How to Care for Aging Parents. I'm Lena Berman. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. We're going to come back to this discussion about such a wide range of assortment of things that you have to consider when you're thinking in terms of trying to help out with a family member who's aging and needs help. Hang tight. We'll be back in 30 seconds.
Gettable, though near or far, like a song of love that clings to me, how the thought of you does things to me. Never before has someone been more unforgettable.
Welcome back. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman on the phone with Virginia Morris, M-O-R-R-I-S, author of A Complete Guide, How to Care for Aging Parents, published by Workmen. W-O-R-K-M-A-N, Workman Press, out in paperback. If you missed part of today's show and you want to get a cassette copy or information on any of the, you know, if you have questions or concerns about what you heard today, general information kind of number, 707-773-4727. I don't have transcripts, just cassettes. Virginia, did you, there's nothing else besides the book. I mean, you don't do any kind of counseling. You wrote the book, and the book is very, it's a lot of pages, and it's very complete.
And I talk a lot about this subject.
Oh, well, but I mean, do
and
you...
And I actually have a new book coming out next year.
What is it?
On death and dying.
Oh, yeah, we'll have to get you right on for that. I always get a lot of response to shows like that. Lots of people order... No, I'm kidding. It's amazing how much people do not, even if it's a very positive spin on it, people don't want to talk about it.
No, it's amazing.
It's terribly important.
That's, you know, I feel like I'm the gloom author, but
somebody has to do it. People
it.
Are secretly buying
stuff.
These books.
That's
yeah.
right. It's yeah. important stuff. It's important
yeah.
stuff. And I think this thing of the caring for the aging parents is, you know, interestingly enough, a fairly new thing. I don't, you know, a generation or two ago, you maybe cared for a parent for a year or a little while or a few months, but this idea of really taking care of somebody for 5, 8, 10 years I mean, people are living longer, but they're spending a lot of years with disability. And I think people sort of assume, oh, of course I'll take care of my mom. She took care of me. And they have no idea. This is an enormous commitment, and they just don't know where to turn because they think, well, I guess I'm just supposed to handle this. And they really have to be told it's okay to get help and get others involved and look to other services. And this is a tough job, and we don't have a lot of role models for it.
Well, let's, before we go on to what other kind of support services might be available even to the caretaker, if you do decide to move one of your parents in to live with you, is, you know, we talked about there's nursing homes, there's these assisted living situations where if you become disabled while you're there, they'll continue to care for you, that are terribly expensive. Nursing homes are very depressing, and they're not cheap and not easy to get into either. So the other alternative is that you can bring somebody into the house either to just be another body to help to clean the house and, you know, make some cooking and be on site in case something happens, to help physically, you know, in an emergency, or call an ambulance, or maybe has some limited amount of medical knowledge, or a nurse, or there's various things. But most parents, at least in the generation of people who were probably born between the early 1900s, 1917, 1920, whatever, people who are in their 80s now, often on both sides of the spectrum, whether they're independent or dependent, don't want someone in their house.
No, and they don't want to move out either. And I'm not sure our generation's going to be all that different about that.
No, I wouldn't want to. You want things to stay the same, and it's very hard to accept that it's not the same.
It's easy to say your mother should accept help, but when it's your turn.
No, very hard. Because it implies debility and fragility, and we don't want to go there.
No, and also it's your home. It's your private space, and to have a stranger there all the time is tricky. And I think, as you mentioned earlier, what happens is the parent says, oh, no, I won't have any strangers in here. And the child says, well, I guess I'm going to have to take this all on myself. You know, at some point you really have to lay it down. You know, I can do this much for you, but these other hours, if I'm not here, here's what might happen to you. And are you willing to take that risk? And here's what somebody could do for you. You know, sometimes if you can introduce these things gradually, if it's not a real crisis situation, I've met people who probably you're talking about who just will not even let a stranger in the house. I mean, they don't want anyone in there doing anything for them. So sometimes if you can introduce it gradually, and maybe there's a Meals on Wheels program.
Well, that's what I was going to get to, is that there are fill-in things that people don't know on. And I don't know how successful Meals on Wheels are, honestly, to be honest with you, but what other kinds of things like that are there available? I mean, most people know about Meals on Wheels, but what are the things that people don't know about?
Well, again, it's such a hodgepodge of services, and every single community is so different than the next. And just finding out what is there can be a nightmare. So, I mean,
well,
I hate to scare people off, but, you know, often there isn't one central number you call, and they'll tell you every service for the elderly that's in that community. I mean, it's not a neat package. There are agencies on aging in every in every sort of area of the country that can at least get you started. Call senior centers, call churches. You just have to make 3 or 4 calls to sort of get the bulk of it. But to answer your question, the kinds of services exist. Everything from telephone check-in, you know, somebody will call your parent every day and make sure they're okay, to companions, to volunteer visitors who will stop in, all the way up to nurses. I mean, you can, you know, get housekeepers, you can get, you know, sort of a whole list of almost anything you can think of, carpenters who will come and do repair, set up a house so it's more user-friendly, you know, ramps and grab bars and that sort of thing. There's a whole litany of services, but you really have to call in your parents' community and find out what's there and what exists. Adult day services, you know, people always say, oh, I would never want to do that. And a lot of them now are really wonderful. I think a lot of these services have responded to the need, and they're getting better. We all have this sort of image of services for the elderly being dreadful, sad, depressing places, and I think a lot of them are changing. But you have to go look, and you have to see what's around.
Well, I think you said something very important when you brought up the fact that if we really stop and think about it, all of us would prefer to stay in our home and be as independent as possible.
Absolutely.
So it may be that as helpers, what we can offer is helping our parents design a plan for them to stay where they are and to be able to manage and navigate. And you just said that, you know, the checklist is that you look and see whether the house has the sorts of physical protections, you know, grab bars and various things, and so that as a parent, if a parent is physically limited, that it gets easier and easier to take care of stuff, you know, so
well,
you get all that in place.
One of the biggest risks for an elderly person is
falling.
A fall.
Yeah.
And I am a huge proponent of prevention, so that kind of work can really prevent, you know, a broken hip and hospitalization. But you're right, you can set up a sort of network of supports and systems. It's a lot of work. And also...
Yeah, but it's probably less work than having them actually live in your house.
Oh, you're right there. You're right. And also, you know, I think you can use your imagination on this. Sometimes people will just get an exchange student or maybe a couple who, in exchange for rent, would do some things around the house. You know, having someone... sharing services. Maybe your mother has a best friend and they move in together and share a, you know, some kind of companion or homemaker kind of person. You know, there are a lot of ways to figure this out. I mean, my own mother has no interest in being alone at home when she can't move about and would rather live in a sort of group community. Mm-hmm. So you have to find out what they want, mm-hmm. but certainly I think for most people, staying in their own homes is where they want to be.
Well, you have to be prepared for what they want to change on a weekly or daily basis, as my observation is with some parents, that their feelings, their emotions are there and they're expressing themselves in them changing their minds. You know, you can probably gauge how they're doing by what they tell you about what they want, and you have to sort of be prepared that it may change a lot.
Well, and the other thing I find that you're maybe hinting at a little bit too is, and it gets a little deeper into the emotional, but you know, a lot of times parents will call, you know, oh, my mother calls me, you know, 10 times a day at work, and I can't help her enough. I do her laundry, I make meals for her, I do this, I do that, and it's never enough. When, in fact, you go over there, and because it's easier, you run around and make her bed and do things for her, and you leave, when all she really wants is for you to sit down and pay attention to her. She's bored. And I think boredom and loneliness become very big issues. And there are, again, things you can do to give your parent things to do and get them involved. I have a whole chapter in the book on, everything from books on tape to exercising at the gym to elder hostel and travel things that are really all set up for people who are disabled to just setting up a lunch with a friend or somebody who comes by or, you know, sitting in front of the TV set all day is not happy for anybody.
Mm-mm. No, or if they're not very ambulatory being inside all day.
You know, sort of figuring out what did they used to be interested in, what sort of got them excited when they were healthier, and what could maybe be an event that they would enjoy. Just calling other friends and neighbors and relatives and saying, you know, could you once a month take mom out for lunch? I mean, just setting people up on a schedule to do things. Because a lot of the demands are often just needing someone to call, I'm bored.
Well, they won't say it like that.
No, but that's what the undercurrent.
Yeah. Well, and what I'm really hearing from you here is that probably a good substitute for a parent, for an adult child who feels very responsible and wants to really be there is to think in terms of not becoming a parent for your parent and taking over and doing everything, but maybe becoming someone who teaches them in the same way that they were taught, that you were taught when you were in Christ. Like a child who's frustrated and upset, sometimes a parent will sit down and say, okay, well, let's figure out what you need or what you want. And in the same way, a child can then do that for the parent when the parent is less clear because mm-hmm. the situation is more frightening and confusing. You can sit down and say, well, let's sort this out. Instead of taking over, let's sort this out and figure out what you need, and maybe we can come up with some suggestions, and I can help find you some people to do this or that, you know?
Mm-hmm. And you're right, too, in just listening to them. I think we tend to think we know what's right for mom or dad. We know what they need, and you know, we just need to get them to agree to it and they'll be fine. We don't stop and say, you know, what are you concerned about? What are you afraid of? What makes you sad or happy, or what do you look forward to in the week?
Yeah, although this
really
gets,
listen to that.
Yeah, although this can get very tricky, because this is where it starts getting emotionally very dicey.
Oh yeah.
When old stuff is coming up and people are jockeying for positions that were old and trying to pull you back, it gets very, very dicey. But as you say in the book, and as I mentioned that you said, these are opportunities, and the end of a parent's life, as you said, isn't a Norman Rockwell painting, but there are opportunities for changing the nature of your relationship in a way that makes you feel good about who you are and who they are, even if it isn't exactly what you wanted. I remember talking recently to somebody who is my parents' age and has children, and he said to me, there's a lot of disappointment on both sides with parents and children. Parents and children both often wanted someone else to be, you know, like you may have wanted different parents and your parents may have wanted a different kid, and that's really very common. And that's just kind of the way it is, that there's this disappointment, and that's something that has to be dealt with. And you have to kind of, it isn't like you can just pretend it doesn't exist. You have to kind of accept that it's there and somehow become large enough to include.
I think it's why this job is so difficult, because it's so loaded.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just a matter of your time and making sure they're safe and finding the right housing situation and all of those sort of business-like things. It's all loaded with so much emotion, and I don't think we recognize how stressful and exhausting just that can be, and sort of stepping back from it and knowing that you need to find time to talk to a friend or to go for a walk or to have
well,
a bath. Or
are there support systems for caretakers?
There are plenty of support groups, and I have to say, I can't tell you how many times I've said to somebody, you know, you might think about a support group, and they say, oh, you know, I'm not the support group kind of person.
Right.
And I get a call, you know, a year later, oh, I found the support group. It really has helped. And, you know, it does help to hear other people and to get some support and to see that others are in this situation and sort of sound it out a little bit. You might have to look, you know, go to one or two before you find one that's right for you. But there certainly are support groups out there.
Quickly, you're listening to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm interviewing Virginia Morris, M-O-R-R-I-S. Her book is How to Care for Aging Parents. The next topic is difficult to talk about. The topic there's two parts to it. One is we're seeing an increase of dementia and Alzheimer's. I mean, this may partially be because of people living longer, but I also suspect that part of what's happening is that we're seeing some effects from environmental issues and other. I think we don't quite know yet what these things are. I think they're, you know, I tend to look at things as being interlinked, and I think it's complex. But it's hard. I mean, there are links from other kinds of chronic conditions that go through life that seem to be connected. There's implications for a connection between blood sugar issues, insulin resistance, diabetes, and Alzheimer's. And then, of course, those things also affect the heart. And there's all kinds of mixed stuff going on here. But you can't unwind that when you're finally presented with a parent that you need to deal with who is losing their capacity to make good decisions. And you will either, in this situation, either have a spouse involved or not. So there's dealing with that, and dealing with how to make decisions when you're dealing with hospitals and care facilities and all of this kind of stuff, how to be an advocate and how to protect them without getting in their way. It's very, you know, so anyway, you have several chapters on this stuff.
Well, and also I think the first problem is just even getting it diagnosed and knowing that that's what's going on. Often the children, the adult children, are the last to notice or the last to accept that something's wrong.
Well, and you can't say something to even the spouse of a parent, like, you know, because a spouse of a parent will either be a little irritated and say he or she is getting worse, and they're, you know, they'll both say that about each other or something, or they're in denial about it, or they know it, but, you know, so it's very difficult to sort of even, and you certainly can't say if you've got a single existing parent, you know, you're losing it.
No, but you can say, you know, I'm concerned and there are things that can help, and why don't we talk to the doctor and see what's going on so we know what we're dealing with and how to help. And then you leave it to the doctor to really dig into the, you know, talk about what the news is.
But if it, that's presuming that you've got a really good doctor, and if you've got a parent that's already impaired choosing their own doctor, you know, how, in other words,
well,
again, how much do you insinuate yourself here?
That's right. And there's also, if you can, if you live near any kind of city, there's more and more of these geriatric assessment centers.
Oh, what's
that? Where
they
really do a full, they have, mm-hmm. well, rather than mom goes to see her general practitioner, you go in and see a whole team of doctors, and they're all specialized in geriatric medicine, but one's a neurologist, and one's, you know, they all deal with different aspects, but they, it's a real team approach to the whole body and all the things that are going on, including social workers and psychiatrists, and, you know, it's the whole group gets together and sees your parent. And I think when you can do that, especially with issues like dementia, it's very helpful because, A, you really know what's going on and what's ahead, and they sit down and really talk about all aspects of care and how you're going to handle this.
So part of what you're suggesting, if I understand it right, is that one solution, one possible solution for an adult child who wants to be involved is to request, out of concern for the parent, to request that they can have access to the physicians and maybe even go on some of these appointments so that they can talk about what's going on.
That the adult child goes,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, and I think in any major assessment like this, which can take hours, they would want some family member, at least one, if not several, present to discuss what's going on.
Well, and I also think, you know, there's another issue, which is that as people age, at least in our society, our culture, at least our parents' generation, tend to believe very firmly in Western medicine. They tend not to use alternative treatments, and they tend to believe that physicians are omnipotent and higher powers and stuff.
And they also tend to not believe in sort of matters of the mind.
You
can gain control over this.
Right.
This isn't biological.
Mm-hmm.
You know, depression is rampant among
yes.
the elderly, and there's
yes.
this attitude of just, you know, suck it up and deal with it. And
walk it off. Just walk it off. So I guess what I'm trying to say here is that they end up having, in my experience, a lot of procedures. Lots of procedures. Lots of stuff gets done. Doctors don't quite know what to do with people as they age. They have a tendency either to say to them, well, you're old. Because I've actually had physicians say this to my mother, you're old. So thank you.
Yeah.
So why don't we just get a body bag and we'll just put me in the trash? I mean, what's the... So they're either bad like that, or they just don't know what to do. So they just sort of throw medication and they throw... And they say, well, let's replace this, or let's do this operation or that operation. And sometimes the parents really want to go for this. So if they do, one of the things that occurs to me is that you don't ever want anybody that you're close to go into a hospital without somebody being there and staying there to watch what's going on.
Right, and actually, even before that, hopefully finding a doctor who really knows about geriatric medicine and what's going on. I mean, I think you're absolutely right, and I don't like to doctor bash, but I think this, you know, children all see pediatricians, and we think that's completely normal, and we wouldn't take our child to another doctor, but it doesn't occur to us that our parents actually need a different sort of doctor when they're older, and they do. Lots of general practice doctors have enough elderly people in their practice that they know what they're doing, and that's fine, but you really have to make sure they have a lot of experience because it requires a different kind of medicine. And you, as you mentioned, you have to be very careful of this sort of ageist attitude that, oh, you're old, what difference does it make? Because a lot of these things are treatable and mm-hmm. deserve attention, and, you know, if your parent's incontinent or depressed or any number of things, this needs attention. And you shouldn't just, you know, people shouldn't be depressed at 80 any more than they should be at 14. So you do need to find the right doctor, and you do absolutely need to be very careful about medications, because over-medicating is rampant among the elderly, and
mm-hmm.
the combination of all the medications is
that's the real problem.
Well,
is
and you
the
know
combos.
They do all the studies in the 50-year-old men, and they don't realize that an 80-year-old body just doesn't need that. You know, you always need to sort of lower the dose.
That's right.
That will work.
Yeah, because the liver doesn't clear as fast. I actually wanted to say a word also about, unless you had something else that you wanted to add real quick.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to say a word about this whole issue of alternative versus medical stuff. I've had lots of people who listen to my show attempt to get their elderly parents to see me, and sometimes with the Lewis Sharer, a phone consult or something, or they'll try to get them to come in for an appointment. And this is my experience. My experience is, if you expose them to some of the material and they're interested, you read some stuff to them, you give them a tape of something to listen to, get them involved in something so that they're interested, and they have interest in treating in a non-pharmaceutical way, then that's great. I've had lots of elderly people come to me, and we do alternatives to medications and things, and they just do really well, and they have a great time, and they're really happy, and it feels good, and they're protected because the pharmaceuticals can be devastating in the long run. But it isn't a good idea to drag a parent. It's very bad, and they resent it, and it's nuts. You know, you're going to tell somebody who's 80 years old not to eat ice cream anymore? I don't think so. You know, the person has to already be whatever it is. So that's, let them choose whether or not they want to do alternative treatments. That said, a couple of quick things, some simple alternatives that can be suggested for say, constipation instead of laxatives or fiber products with additives. The fiber products that are out there have lots of things added to them, like NutraSweet, which we now know is not so good, and the fiber product itself is a sprayed product with lots of pesticides. Some of the alternatives would be extra vitamin C, extra magnesium, including using an Epsom bath, because people become deficient in magnesium. Magnesium can be a cathartic if you take too much. Both magnesium and vitamin C will speed up a slow gut, and they will protect the person in a lot of other ways. Magnesium also is very good in a bath, Epsom salts for sore joints, and also good for insomnia because magnesium is a relaxing thing. Heartburn. Instead of immediately trying to quell all the stomach acid, it may be that you need to use a digestive enzyme and some probiotics like acidophilus products, or possibly some DGL licorice, which is a type of licorice that doesn't raise blood pressure. It's DGL, think darn good licorice, is very good for coating and protecting the mucous membranes and healing them. It may not be too much acid. It may be too little enzymes. For achy people, you can do MSM through the skin if it upsets their stomach. You can put vitamin E and essential fatty acids through the skin and also take them to reduce inflammation. Glucosamine is working well. Extra vitamin E and extra magnesium, along with coenzyme Q10 and carnitine, are very, very important for protecting the heart. You call it CCME. CoQ10, carnitine, magnesium, and vitamin E for the heart. And for the brain, we now have something called phosphatidyl serine, which is very promising in trials. It's the short version of it is PSA. Ask for it as PSA. It's a brain nutrient. Carnitine is good for the brain. Glutamine, two amino acids. And yes, enough protein is very important for the brain as well. And we're starting to run out of time, so those are just a couple of quick things that are alternatives to just immediately going to a pharmaceutical. So you do include in the book a lot of information about dealing with the end of life in here. So if people are ready to read that, the nice thing about this book is you can sort of go to a section at a time. You can sort of read ahead to what's coming.
Well, that was sort of the whole point, because I realized when you are caring for an aging parent, the last thing you have time for is to sit down and read 300, 400 pages. So, you know, if whatever the problem is, incontinence, driving, whatever it is, you just go to that page.
Yeah, I think it's really well organized.
Well, thank you.
Did you have any last words for the listeners?
Well, I can talk about this subject forever, so I will just urge them to plan ahead. Save themselves a lot of headaches.
Yeah, I think I would say the same. Once again, you've been listening to Virginia Morris. Don't go away yet. I just want to remind them of the book. It's How to Care for Aging Parents, a complete guide, How to Care for Aging Parents. It's Virginia Morris's M-O-R-R-I-S, and it's published by Workman, W-O-R-K-M-A-N Press, and it's available in paperback. This is a new edition, so it has some updated information in it.
Mm-hmm.
Have things changed a lot since you wrote the first edition?
Well, I'm always trying to, you know, keep it up to date here and there. I think minor things.
has managed care managed to make elderly care worse?
I think so.
Yeah,
me
too.
Made all our care worse.
It seems so. They managed not to care for us.
That's a whole other
hour. Yeah, oh gosh. That would be a good book, too.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, when you get your new book done, go ahead and zip me a copy so I can see whether we can find a way to talk about it without getting people really upset.
No, no, it's a very uplifting book.
Okay, I believe you. So, Virginia Morris, thank you very much for
thank
your time.
You.
I look forward to reading your next book. And thanks.
Thanks. Take care.
Bye. And thanks, all of you, for listening. A reminder that if you missed parts of today's show and you want to get a cassette copy, I don't have transcripts. I'm sorry, but I do have cassettes. And please don't be in a hurry to get these. I do get deluged with orders for popular shows, but you can order by calling, getting information by calling my information number. You can also call with concerns or questions about what you've been hearing, 707-773-4727, 707-773-4727 for brave souls who are on their internet. You can go to my website, and there's a tape list and other information. Just go to the KPFA website, which is kpfa.org, and follow the links to your own health and fitness. Thanks to Lisa Ballard for taking care of the board and engineering the show. Next week, I'll be back discussing the book Biomimicry, The Innovation Inspired by Nature, with science, life science writer Janine Bennis, who is at the Bioneers Conference. Very interesting book, using nature for designing technology. This has been Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman, and Your Own Health and Fitness, as usual, is produced live in the studios of listener-sponsored Free Speech Radio, and may that live forever. KPFA FM in Berkeley, California, and I'll be back with you next week.